T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
This is Dusty and Cam in the morning.
Come on, guys. Early worm gets the worm.
Another worm? Like, are they friends?
Early bird gets the worm.
With Dusty Hera.
That kid probably needs to be punched in the face.
In an ideal world, I would have all 10 fingers on my left hand, so my right hand could just be a fist for punching.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
Who wants some man meat?
I do. I want some man meat.
No, I'm not a meat gazer.
Dusty and Cam on 1080.
He's like the Lone Ranger, and I'm like Tonto. And it's not like there was the Lone Ranger and Tonto and Bonto.
The Fan.
All right, hour number two, Dusty and Cam in the morning. Thank you for being a part of our morning, letting us be a part of yours. CJ McCollum out for at least another month. Hairline fracture found in his left foot. Oh, boy. That is the news of the day in Blazer world as they released that tweet late last night, 11:08 p.m., Blazers found a hairline fracture on the imaging of CJ McCollum.
Yeah, you were all like, how do you miss a hairline? Have you ever looked at the size of a piece of hair? Hair's pretty small, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like even the best in the world could miss a hairline fracture. But you're like, how do you miss that? Do you miss that?
That's not what I was saying. Was somebody staring at it for 48 hours and then like, oh, yeah. There it is.
Well, it's a hairline. Hairline means extremely tiny.
It was at 11 o'clock at night.
Guys' eyes were probably tired.
Exactly.
Multiple doctors, orthopedists are like, all right, let's go over this.
That is the news of the day in the Blazer world, though. So Nurk is out for 2 months, and CJ will be reevaluated in 1 month. Oh, boy. So it starts.
He's probably left-handed. Or did he break his left wrist? Which wrist was it? Is the wrist one. That's right. It was. He played left-handed.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, football player put a club on it and keep going.
Mm-hmm. I think you need both of your hands in basketball, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not for the one kid who played for, oh, my gosh, what did he play? He played for Battleground back in the day. He was a football basketball player. I remember watching. He had one. Yeah. Incredible.
There was in college, there was a point guard for Concordia's women's team. Yeah. And she had one hand. She was amazing.
Amazing.
She was really good.
How did she shoot?
With one hand.
With one hand.
Well, but I mean, like the like release Magic Johnson and the come up shot. And everything. So,
do you shoot with two hands, Will?
Please don't tell me you shoot with two hands.
Well, you need a stabilizing arm.
Nah.
Oh, you don't?
No, I mean, she had an arm.
So why don't you shoot with one hand?
There's
then?
An arm.
You do shoot with one hand. Don't you know what right-handed layups, left-handed layups?
Guide
you ever
hand.
Done that?
You have a guide hand. It's not there to aim your shot, Will. It's just there to guide it.
Yeah,
Will, not a basketball player.
No,
Will Durkin's
obviously not
a basketball player.
Not understanding.
All right, this hour we'll talk about cheating, and we'll also talk about whether Seahawks fans should panic or not. But where we got to start, we have an update to Patrick Mahomes ahead of the AFC Championship game. Andy Reid, the head coach of the Chiefs, giving an update to his quarterback status after being pulled from their divisional round game with a concussion protocol.
Question mark.
Injury.
I really don't have any injuries to talk about other than Patrick's, and he's in protocol there, so and we'll just follow that and see how he does here the next couple days.
Wow, Andy, that's the big update that you got there from him.
Perfect.
He's just not a good liar. He's like he really wants to say what is being widely reported now, including from Carrington Harrison. Okay. Who is from our sister station, 620 Sports in Kansas City, which is that it is a pinched nerve in his neck. Here is what the sources told Carrington Harrison. Patrick passed all of his tests last night. He didn't actually hit his head. It was a nerve in his neck that got tweaked and made him out of it. He's getting testing done on his neck and nerve today, but did clear all of his tests last night.
All right, let me give you the football lingo of what that happened. He got a stinger. He got a stinger. When it pinches, and in the impingement, it sends a burner. And another word that we used to call them is burners. So it burns down. And the other thing is he got the wind knocked out of him too, because when it pinched and how he got hit. The major concern, I think, of all of this is really his toe. And by the way, if that was Bill Belichick or Pete Carroll or any other coach in the playoffs, you wouldn't get much out of them anyway. So Andy Reid is just...
I don't want to give up too much, but I'm just going to... I don't know.
Yeah, he just wanted to have a cheeseburger and go to bed.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
As everybody does.
Right, it's a cheeseburger.
But you said the toe is the bigger issue. I mean, the bigger issue. I think the neck is too, though, because a nerve issue, that can linger.
Yeah.
I mean, in a quarterback, I mean, John Wolford is a guy who didn't play because of his, or he wasn't available because he had a stinger.
Yeah.
And he was taken out of the game. And that's a weird one, though. It made him dazed because of the...
Well, he all got the wind knocked out of him, too, because he couldn't get any air. Yeah.
Do we know that?
Yeah, no, they said it during the game. Said it during and after the game. Said it was part of the shot when he got down there. When he landed on the ball, and it was just all of it was, it's like a culmination of things. And here's what you shouldn't do. Don't run the option with a $50 million quarterback.
Here is one of the big issues, though, that the Kansas City Chiefs still have, though, is that he is in the concussion protocol still, because it is not just, we call it the concussion protocol, but it is head, neck, and spine protocol.
Yes.
So this obviously falls into that, and he still has to go through all five steps of it.
Right.
Which, you know, the baseline testing is one, but then he needs to, you need to graduate through each of these steps, and those take, by the protocol, days to do.
Yeah, he's playing. Those that think he's not playing, I don't know if there's probably a line in Vegas that would tell you if he's playing.
Oh, Vegas believes he will play. Patrick Mahomes, they have not adjusted the line.
Patrick Mahomes would have to have his arm ripped off to not be able to play in this game.
Or like be in the concussion protocol still.
Well, I think, like you said, they're not going to declare it a concussion, so they don't have to even pass that. They're going to have to sit there and go through the head, neck, and spine protocol, but not concussion protocol.
It's the same thing.
They didn't diagnose a full concussion. So that has to come from the neurologist when it all is said and done. Mm-hmm. But here's the other thing is that he has to play. He just has to play, because without Patrick Mahomes, there's no hope. There's just no chance. It's not the same. It's not the same offense, not the same team, it's not anything. And he will play, and we need to play. Because that's what Warriors do. This is the playoffs. This isn't a time to be worrying about whether I got a little burner in my arm or I got a little sore toe. This is when dudes play. This is when you got to step it up and play. Everybody's hurt.
I think for Mahomes' sake, it's really good news that, you know, the report is that no concussion, and that stinger in his neck. It'll be interesting to see how he kind of feels as the days go on.
Mm-hmm.
And the re-aggravation of the nerve injury, though, that's something that can happen quite often. So offensive line better keep him clean. I have a feeling they're not going to run speed option.
And I think it also is a great job. You get to see what Buffalo and their game plan and how well they did it with their game plan with Lamar Jackson, what they would do differently to prevail, because they've already played Kansas City. They had one shot at them this year. And so it's different when your quarterback isn't as mobile. And Patrick Mahomes is a very mobile quarterback. And if he has to turn into a stand around the pocket guy, get the ball out of your hands faster, it's a different kind of offense, because he can hold the ball and extend plays. He's just as good as anybody. Well, he might be the best. I mean, Russell Wilson might be the best. We call it scramble drill guy. Aaron Rodgers is the best off script. Patrick Mahomes is the best of all of them. He could just do anything with the football at any time.
And that will change, not just because of his neck, but his toe too.
I don't think so.
I mean, it
probably, but it's not going to change who he is, because once the ball is snapped, his mind is going to go into do whatever I can. Now, if his body limits him, but he's still going to think. And all these guys, you have to play like you can do whatever you can.
Wait, so are you concerned or not concerned about the toe? You said you were more concerned about the toe, and then you said it won't really matter.
No, what I'm saying is it will matter to his body physically, but for him mentally, he's going to go do whatever he takes. So he might try to extend a play and run around and do all that. He might take a needle and shoot the toe up so he doesn't feel it. Who knows? He'll do whatever it takes because he's that kind of kid.
Who knows? I think we all know the answer to that. It's going to happen. The needle is going to happen, right?
It should. It's time to win a championship. Oh, man. Nobody's going to talk about it when you're 50. Do what you got
to
do.
So Mahomes, it does seem like he is on track to play. No panic in Kansas City quite yet over his availability for the AFC Championship game against the Buffalo Bills. But is there cause for concern in Tampa as the Buccaneers have to head from the warm confines of a dome last week in New Orleans and their sunny Tampa digs that they've got into the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field? And the key to Tampa's success late in their late season run, Bruce Arians may have hinted at what it is. Dustin Cam on the Fan. Supposed to be cold in Green Bay this weekend. I know, it's shocking. Late January, and it'll be cold in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
I can't believe it.
But that is not something that Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are worried about.
It's just a matter of staying warm on the sidelines, because when you're out there on the field, I don't know if anybody, every time I played in Green Bay, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Buffalo, nobody was cold out on the field. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's a matter of, it's more mental than staying warm on the sideline. Got all that technology now with heaters and everything else. So it's really not, it's different, but it's not that big difference.
It's easy for the guy wearing parkas and what appears to be a defibrillator on the sideline.
When did the new heat technology come out? I thought it was just.
Well, they got the benches where you stick your feet in and they get warm. They have those heating pipes that you put your helmet on.
Yeah, I said the same ones.
Big heater, blowing hot air.
Propane heater.
That melts.
All that new technology.
That melts anything within 5 feet of it.
I literally lit my hands on fire.
See?
In Green Bay. December 7th on Monday Night Football.
Also, I'd like to address one thing that Bruce Arians said, in that nobody has ever been cold out on the football field. Yeah, you may not be cold, but it sure as hell feels different when you run into somebody in 30 degree weather as opposed to 75.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a mental side to it. Adrenaline will get you through a lot of stuff in a football game. If you're a starter and you're always playing, you can handle it. But if you're a guy coming in and out and you're subbing in and out, you're cold. You can't not avoid that.
I would say so.
You're cold. And 24 degrees is pretty cold. I will say that. That sounds like, yeah, no problem. But we've seen a cold team go on the road and beat another cold team. Well, this is Tom Brady saying that my blood is thinned a little bit and Tampa can go up there and play. I think, look, all those guys are veterans. They've known. They've spent time. If anybody remembers how to play in non-perfect weather, it's going to be Tom Brady and his leadership. So that's not the worry.
Well, not only that, but you have Antonio Brown, who hopefully he plays.
Yeah, knee injury,
by the way.
Yeah.
He's from Pittsburgh. And where he played in Pittsburgh. And then you have Gronk, who also is a guy who played in New England for most of his career. Mm-hmm. And so those guys are used to cold weather. I mean, when you talk about some of your stars and your weapons that you have on the defensive side, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. But, I mean, playing in the cold weather is one thing. You're also playing against the best damn team in the NFC right now. And the team that looks like the best team in the NFC right now. I mean, teams that are hosting in the playoffs, there's a reason why the dome team doesn't travel well to outdoors in the playoffs. It's because that's the better seed too, isn't it?
Well, of course. So that's kind of how it works.
I mean, like, we always talk about how, a dome team going outside in the cold. Well, there's a reason why they're going out into the cold. It's because they're better.
Well, it's also too, is that they have a great advantage, and that's why you want that number one seed. And I said this from the start coming through in November, as Green Bay started playing better, they started playing better defense and started running the football. They had the stranglehold on the number one seed, and it was going to be very difficult to go into Green Bay. I still don't think Green Bay loses. I think they go to the Super Bowl. I'm going to pick them, not because I think that they're head and shoulders better. I just think they have the advantage. And I think because it's at home and it's Lambeau Field, I've only seen it done a couple times, and I know it happened with the Giants, and I get that. But still, to be able to go in there and beat them, it's going to have to take a Herculean effort by Tampa to be able to do it.
Yeah, it's hard for the road team to win in these games. But, you know, the last warm weather team to go on the road and win the AFC Championship game?
So it'd be a Southern team and go on the road and win. I don't. You have the answer. Go ahead.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Philadelphia.
2002, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
02. I mean, unless you want to qualify Carolina the very next year because they did it in Philly as well.
I mean, that's about the same. You can do that. You know,
I mean, Carolina can get North. Charlotte gets pretty cold.
I was looking at this was a take today by former Hall of Famer Kurt Warner. He came out and he said yesterday, I think it was game day. NFL Network, and he had mentioned that all games in the playoffs should be played in the dome, in domes. So first of all, football, I feel very, I'm pretty staunch about this. I think domes should be outlawed, like across the world when it comes to football. Okay, let's just say arcade, because we only play football here. I think domes are horrible. They're terrible. Of course, I played a lot, my first rookie year, I played 14 games on AstroTurf. Destroyed, shortened my whole career because of what it is. But this sport is meant to be played outside. So inclement weather and understanding that and dome teams. And that's what we have. We've had a couple dome teams win Super Bowls. You've had you'd have had New Orleans do it. Had Indianapolis do it. But in this last decade and moving forward, it's really been about weather teams and outside teams and teams that can travel and play in the cold and the northern teams. But then when you play a Super Bowl, I don't even like the Super Bowls inside. Never have. Never been a fan of it. So I can't even understand Kurt's take because he was, you know, they won a Super Bowl as a team that was the St. Louis Rams at the time's greatest show on turf inside. And of course you're going to be biased that way, but that's not football. Football is meant to be played outside.
Wait, so you're saying that like in Miami, it's okay to play outdoors, just not in a dome in Detroit?
Correct. I think you should be able to play all Super Bowls should be a destination you want to go to. So even though New York was outside and it's bad weather, oh, well, that's the Super Bowl. It's New York. I don't think dome teams should be able to have Super Bowls.
I am pro snow football, so I don't mind. I don't mind any of this that you're saying right now.
Yeah.
Give me snow football.
Can you make more money as a dome team rather than an outside team? Because I think about a lot of the domes in the NFL, and there's a lot of stuff that is packed into it, whether it's restaurants, suites. I mean, I know that's what outdoor ones.
Well, yeah,
too,
because you can do concerts in there year-round as well.
Yeah, but outside places do them too. But you're right. The versatility of a dome is it's more financial or it's been around that way. The Superdome was built to be multi-versatile facet in New Orleans. But from here on out, Atlanta has it. And I don't know why Atlanta built another dome. I don't even get it.
Well, they built a retractable roof that doesn't work.
Yeah, they did. They did.
It's like a $10 million roof that doesn't open.
I mean, Indianapolis, don't tell me that Indianapolis is some really cold place. You have Cleveland, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh.
No, I will tell you Indianapolis is a very cold place.
No, but it's no colder than Cleveland, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, or anyone else, Baltimore, anyone else of those divisions.
No.
It's not colder. So don't act like Indianapolis, oh, it's the worst place to be. No, play outside. Minnesota did it. I get why Minnesota wanted to do it, but their college teams don't.
But their college teams don't play in January. Like that playoff game between the Seahawks and Vikings, I loved every second of it, but all you heard was complaints from people about it being way too cold. People, even fans in the stands whose beers were freezing as they were drinking them because it was so damn cold.
And don't you
deal with it?
And don't you remember in the I think it was either 2010 or 2011 season where their dome got snowed in, right? The Vikings dome got snowed in.
The roof collapsed. Yeah,
the roof got collapsed. You remember they had to start playing some of their games outside.
Well, yeah, that was the playoff game that I'm talking about against Seattle.
And you had old ass Brett Favre. That's the one I'm thinking of. When old ass Brett Favre had
that wasn't
in the snow.
What?
That was a different time. The Seahawks played them when they were building the new stadium.
Yeah, that was when
they
were building the new stadium.
When it collapsed, I think you are correct, in Brett Favre having to play outdoors.
I specifically remember it because he kept looking horrible in the snow, which kind of confused me too because he's played in the snow forever. It's Brett Favre, Green Bay.
Well, it's kind of personal feeling, but from watching sports and watching the NFL and watching what it is, to be able to travel and knowing that you have an outdoor stadium in the north and it's going to be cold. New England did it for years and years. Now Green Bay's doing it this year. Kansas City's a tough place to play at Arrowhead on the road. It's your elements and all these. Isn't it strange? We got one warm team. All the other three are going to deal with their home field advantage that they're going to have. And so I like that. I like the fact that Buffalo's going to have to go on the road, but they're not going to be affected by going to Kansas City. They're like, it's cold in Buffalo too.
So with all of this being said, the dome that Kurt Warner's talking about is one thing. Just outdoor warm weather teams, though, is that a big factor in this game as much?
Yep. No question it is. No question
Even
it is.
Even with Brady and all those guys?
I think Brady won't be the only one because he's been experienced and knows what it takes to be able to do that. But, yeah, absolutely it does. Aaron Rodgers is going to laugh his way. They're grabbing the football. Those guys they're used to it. The confidence that they have at Lambeau is twice the amount. And so the pressure is more, truthfully, than what's more on Aaron Rodgers. Because if Tom Brady comes in and beats you, then you're like, oh, my God. It'd be a huge upset. I really think it would be.
Well, they kicked the living bejeebers out of them earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm. And what happened to a cold team going to the South? We see New England do it every single year. They go down to Miami, not used to the heat, early in the season, get stomped. Miami goes up to New England late in the season, they get beat. It's just natural.
Yeah. This is going to be fun. I think what's more telling in the Tampa Bay's keys to success, and I think this plays into the weather conversation as well, is the no risk it, no biscuit. Bruce Arians saying that he's allowed Tom Brady to have more rain on how the offense is operating. I mean, taking shots downfield in the cold, that ain't going to be conducive or as conducive as run the football, use a little play action, and more of that recipe that Tom Brady was so successful with in New England, where they played a hell of a lot of cold weather games.
They got two really good running backs, Tampa does. They have big physical targets with Mike Evans and Gronk, and they have Brate, and you certainly have, and if Antonio Brown's, that's a nice piece, certainly is a nice advantage and piece. They got weapons upon weapons, but oh, by the way, their defense created 4 turnovers last week. So they're playing perfect football. Do what you have to do. Play to your strengths. React to the turnovers. That you can tell me a weakness in Tampa. You can run the football. Your offensive line played very, very well. Very well. Up against one of the better pass rushes, if not one of the best pass rushes in New Orleans. Tom Brady can spin it as good as anybody. His arm still is as strong as it ever has. His velocity has not changed. Aaron Rodgers, this is a great matchup.
You know what the weakness is? That I noticed this, and I thought...
Thin blood. Right, that's it. Thin blood. That's all I can think of.
No, it happened right when it happened. It's like, God, they get beat on a trick play every time they're on national television. Like they are like.
Oh, you're talking the Jameis Winston throw?
Yeah. Right when it happened, I was like, well, that's predictable because they always get busted on a trick play. But if that's your big weakness, and their center getting personal foul penalties.
Oh,
but
he kicked
I love
the
that
crap
guy.
Out of, I love Brian. That kid. That dude. He is spectacular. If you want to watch a center play football, watch him just pancake it.
And he's got a ponytail.
I love it. He's a ginger, too. Is that shocking to you? Salty. Just salty.
I don't know why it would be shocking.
It's not.
Okay, is it time to panic for Seahawks fans? That's after Will with SportsCenter. The two words that no football team wants to hear in the National Football League. When it comes to a vacancy, is Adam Gase. That's what Seahawks fans heard yesterday. As Adam Gase reportedly has talked to Seahawks about their vacant offensive coordinator position. Oh, boy. Should Seahawks fans be worried about this?
Maybe you're kicking the tires. At first, the report was Doug Peterson, and that's kind of just quieted very quickly. Love that system. Love the system. Love the West Coast style. Love everything about it. Adam Gase, I think he's been in the NFL for quite some time. It's been known to be able to coach offensive football. Terrible head coach, terrible leader. So can he coach? One thing that's really strange about what the Seahawks have done the last few years with their offensive coordinators is I've noticed a trend with Pete Carroll. Okay, Darrell Bevell, kind of an upstart, not really innovative, but kind of interesting. Pete Carroll likes to bring in offensive minds that are – What's the right term I'm looking for? Simple, because Brian Schottenheimer was known and learned under his father and Marty Ball. Okay, learned that way and got really successful, getting to a couple AFC Championship games with Rex Ryan and the Jets, and became very boring offense. Protect the football, play a lot of defense, and I think that's what Pete Carroll wants. The issue is going to be. Do you think really that Pete Carroll's going to try to be innovative on offense? That is going to be the question. Is there going to be innovation? Is there going to be answers? Can they cater an offense around what Russell can do and cannot do? Or are they just going to say, we're going to play great defense, we won a Super Bowl with great defense and running the football with Marshawn Lynch? If they want to go back to that, and that formula worked for them in 2014, who here thinks in 2021 that Pete Carroll is going to deviate off that? He's not.
Well, I would say that if I'm a Seahawks fan, I'm okay with all of this conversation, because Adam Gase doesn't fit anything that you're talking about, because he's a Steve Mariucci and Mike Martz disciple.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he cut his teeth. Mike Martz, he of one of the most complex playbooks in the National Football League.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't really fit with anything that these Seahawks do.
And those are two different systems, because Mooch is a West Coast guy, and Coach Martz is a Don Air Coryell three-digit kind of player who doesn't believe in tight end play. In fact, I always use this example. He told Greg Olsen he would never be very good and didn't use him and didn't like him in Chicago. All Greg Olsen did is be a Hall of Fame tight end. I'll move on from there. But what Adam Gase wants to bring to quarterback play, I don't think he's a quarterback whisperer, so you're not going to convince me of that. Can he coach offense under a Pete Carroll style? I think it's going to be an underwhelming hire, whoever it is. I was excited about the Doug Peterson one, because that's a big-time hire, if that one would work. Probably not going to happen. Doesn't sound like it's going
to
happen.
From all of the reports, he is going to take a year off. If he's not a head coach.
Sure.
In the NFL. So that ain't going to happen. And so now it's kind of back to square one. And I don't know. I have no idea what direction the Seahawks are going to go with their offense.
Well, look at their talent.
It kind of just sounds like it'll be somebody that we've never heard of, probably.
So if you want to cater around talent, first of all, you got to start your system around Russ. So Russ can't be a pocket passer. We know that. Okay. You can't put a 5'10", 5'11 guy in the pocket. It's just not successful. That won't happen. It's physically, he can't see very well. So he has to be move. If you're on the move and you'd be able to adjust and play action, so you create lanes with play action. Because if you are going to be in an offset read zone mentality where everything is an offset gun, your play action is always going to be a mesh, which a mesh handoff is where you fake the handoff to the inside crosser because he's staggered to your left with Chris Carson or Rashad Penny or whoever's there. So linebackers don't really care. But when you're under center, like say what you're dealing with Kyle Shanahan, and you watch Sean McVay, they fluctuate back and forth, but they run all their play action with what's called an outside zone mindset or a zone scheme, which causes linebackers and everybody, and then it creates a throwing lane once you've set up because you can see back over the top. Seahawks got away from all of that. They didn't have a dominant running game. They didn't run in a six-man formation. They didn't be able to have downhill. And so moving forward, Russ has to be able to have that. You can't put him in the gun and expect him to sit in the pocket and do all that stuff. He won't be successful because you tried it at the end of the year, and it was dreadful. They played cover two. They brought pressure, and he didn't have anywhere to go. So whatever happens next, you don't have a dominant tight end. Okay, you have one really good wide receiver, another small, slight wide receiver who's pretty good. You don't have a dominant running back. You don't have a great offensive line. So what can you do to showcase Russell Wilson moving forward with offense? That's going to be a big, big upgrade for what they do.
Yeah, and the DK Metcalf, his numbers went down in the back half of the year because when he faced the dominant corners, which you will face in the playoffs,
in your division.
Yeah, well, all across your division.
Yeah.
Every single team in your division has him. They locked him up pretty well, and they found a way to slow him down. And that's a pretty interesting development as the season went on, too, is that teams figured out a way to shut down DK Metcalf.
Well, think about I would put DK Metcalf in the Calvin Johnson conversation. Not yet in the Julio Jones conversation. You mean to tell me that if you're looking at DK Metcalf and you're looking at all those great wide receivers, when Calvin Johnson was out his best, and you could see Matt Stafford and the quarterbacks that were throwing to him, they created a system to allow him to get open to showcase. You have to be able to do that. Just because you have Jalen Ramsey or Adrian Peterson on you, or whoever, if it's Richard Sherman, but he's kind of over the hill, but whoever the top corners in your division, and then you have safety help over the top, you have to find ways to get him the football. He needs to have a minimum of 10 to 12 targets a game. Minimum. That's just not even, that shouldn't even be in the question of where it's at. He should be a 5 to 8 catch a guy minimum per every game. And I don't care whose game plan you're going up against. So with that being said, this is a dysfunction of what the Seahawks want to do. And this will move forward and tell you what Pete Carroll, if you're going to be a dominant run game, who's your dominant running back? It's not Chris Carson. It's not Rashad Penny. Who's going to be your guy?
You know, that is the most incredible thing about Calvin Johnson, you bring him up, is that everybody knew he was getting the ball.
Yep. Yep.
Like, I mean, I know that people want to say, like, DK Metcalf got upset when Jim Schwartz said, you know, you're not Calvin Johnson yet. Calvin Johnson, you know who the next best receiver was on that Lions team where he almost had 2,000 yards? It was Brandon Pettigrew. Brandon Pettigrew was the next best receiver on that team. And everybody knew Calvin Johnson was going to get the ball. Yep. And he had 122 catches, 1,964 yards.
Yeah,
my God.
Well, defenses aren't, they're not God back there. Okay, that's not, they can't just throw a blanket over a guy that's that effective. You can't. You can't, you can't just tell me if you're that good. And DK is that good. He has that kind of ability. But you don't have elite kind of mindset with kind of schemes and the things that you'll be able to do it. And maybe that's a Russ issue. And I'll tell you, Russ's inefficiencies, his height is a deal. I mean, that's just, I'm sorry. You don't have the arm. He doesn't have the arm like Matt Stafford. He's got a good arm. Russell Wilson throws a beautiful deep ball. He doesn't have the snap release like Matt Stafford. He doesn't have that kind of ability to be creative with that stuff. He's versatile. He can move around. He creates plays with his feet, but he's an off-script thrower.
Question about what we're saying about Russell Wilson right now. Heading into the year, he was the second best quarterback in the NFL. Did this year change that for people?
According to who?
The players in the NFL.
Who?
Remember that players ranking thing where he was ranked number two only behind Patrick Mahomes?
Oh, okay. You're using that.
I
still think Russ is he's a Pro Bowler, Hall of Famer quarterback. Well, everybody.
I know.
Yeah.
But the question is, did he take a hit this year with the perception of he was regarded as one of, if not the best quarterbacks in the NFL heading into this year? Did that change?
No, I think so. Well, I don't know. If you want my answer, I'm going to give you, he's still a top five quarterback.
Top five, but he's not like top two or three anymore.
Well, if he was, he would be one of the final four. So I can't give you that. I would rank Aaron Rodgers ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
I would rank certainly Tom Brady ahead of him. I would rank Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. All four of those guys I put ahead of him.
Yeah.
And guess who all four of them are? In the playoffs.
Still playing.
So, yeah.
Still playing.
I would put Russ at five. I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, that's not a bad thing.
No.
Being a top five quarterback.
No. You won a Super Bowl with a rookie contract and a guy that was a very good player. You lost a Super Bowl when you went away from your run game. Pete Carroll goes to bed at night. Every single night, he goes to bed and probably thinks, God, I should have handed it off to flipping Marshawn Lynch. And he still, you know how much that affects him? Those that say that doesn't affect him, it does to this day. Because that is iconic back-to-back. Nobody does that, back-to-back Super Bowls. That's iconic teams, iconic coaches, back-to-back Super Bowls. That puts you in a conversation of one of the top five ever to do it, and they made a mistake. And he knows it every single day and can't fix it moving forward because he still wants to run the ball.
Patriots would have stopped that play.
Maybe, but would they have stopped the next because it was only second down?
No, they would have ran out of time.
Oh, no, they had a timeout left.
Nope, still would have ran out of time.
All right, you got a lot of excuses, a lot of reasons.
Well, they won the game.
They did win the game. It doesn't matter.
It's not an excuse or a reason.
Well, you're saying what ifs.
Well, yeah, you just literally said if he would have run the ball.
No, he thinks that. I think it was a good call. It was not a bad call. It was an unbelievable play
on defense. Malcolm Butler.
It was unbelievable.
My God, that was incredible. Yeah. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. That's the mantra of the SEC, right?
Wrong.
Dustin Cam on the Fan. Tennessee has fired their head coach, Jeremy Pruitt. They went 3-7, the Vols did this past year. And look, let's not make any mistake about it. They're firing him because of, quote unquote, cheating.
You want to know what they did?
Look, they are firing Jeremy Pruitt because he lost too many football games. There were rumblings about Jeremy Pruitt getting fired at the very beginning of this year.
Right.
And then they just found a reason not to pay him. Jeremy Pruitt got fired yesterday.
Well, they definitely found a reason not to pay him, and he's not going to go down without a fight. But because of the recruiting violations that they are alleging and are saying that they have come to know, they are going to forego a $12 million buyout that will be a fight in court because there's no way he's walking away. And then you have the whole dysfunction of Tennessee.
Yeah, it's not good what's going on at Tennessee. And really, it hasn't been good for, a decade in Vol land down there in Knoxville because...
Haven't won the conference since 1998.
No, but they played in conference championship games SEC championship games.
Absolutely.
But you've fallen far behind your rivals, and your rivals are Florida, Georgia, and Alabama.
Yeah, which, a little team called Alabama.
Dear God. Mm-hmm. Talk about three worst rivals for you to have down years against. Those three programs have lapped Tennessee, and there's a lot of pride down there. Like, this all started back when you had the dysfunction in the athletic department where Philip Fulmer took over as the athletic director. Then they had their debacle after debacle in hiring football coaches from when Lane Kiffin left in the middle of the night, and they hired Derek Dooley. And then remember when they were going to hire Greg Schiano?
Yeah, and had a revolt.
Yeah.
Pathetic.
And then now you're looking at with what everything about Mike that's
Leach?
Happened.
You forgot about the Mike Leach.
Yeah, you had Mike Leach agreeing to terms, and then they're like, oh, God, we don't want Mike Leach.
Mike Leach.
Which they may have dodged a bullet on that one.
Maybe.
But then they end up hiring Jeremy Pruitt from Alabama. Get him from your rival. Jeremy Pruitt, who is a high school defensive coordinator at Hoover High on the show 2 Days on MTV.
It's a great show.
And worked his way up to, a Division I head coach. And look, they aren't very good at Tennessee. And the dysfunction does start at the top. I mean, no doubt about it. It starts at the top.
So the reports are that Tennessee, their recruiting violations, that they were handing bags of money in McDonald's bags during recruiting trips. That's one of the violations that they got caught doing, like bags of cash. Okay.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how you look at it. But yeah, that's all right. Bags of cash, whatever you need to do.
I look at it from every angle, and I think that's pretty awesome.
I'm going to take this stance, and I'm going to see more and more of these teams are doing everything they can. So this is where I look at it with Tennessee. It is their fault, but it's more on the fault of college football. And here's how I can explain it that might make sense because somebody's going to say, well, what are you talking about? They're responsible for their own things. Well, think about where Tennessee is. Tennessee's a rival of all those big teams that you just said. And if you don't think those teams are fudging up against the line, they all are too. But what college football's gotten to the point was there's only three really significant teams. Maybe four. And if you're not one of those four, then you're in the, oh my God, if we're not cheating, we're not doing everything we can to out-recruit. Because I said that yesterday, is that stars win. Even in college football, you got to have the Jims and the Joes. 33 first-round picks in the decade from Alabama. 33 first-round picks in the 2010s from the decade of Alabama. Texas had two. Okay. Now they brought in Steve Sarkisian. So you have Georgia. You have Florida. Tennessee's in the SEC. They are not at fault anymore. They're like Phil Fulmer, Pruitt. What do we have to do to compete with these? Because the fans are saying it. The alumni saying it. Peyton Manning's coming in for a speech. We're going to get back to the Rocky Top, and we're going to do whatever we can. This is college football, and their dysfunction is that there's only four teams that are any good, and so everyone else, if you're not cheating, you're just average, and nobody likes average. The average person doesn't even like average.
Well, and you mentioned Peyton Manning, and I thought something interesting that came out of this is that there are reports he's going to be involved in the process of hiring the next head coach, like
Jason Witten.
Yeah, that he is going to be kind of at the front of it.
Oh, boy. See, and that,
is that a bad
this
thing?
Is where...
Is that a bad thing?
Well, yeah, you want to have somebody who has the experience in, like, not at the forefront.
So you want to pay a search committee that, like, $4 million?
Oh, God,
search
no, that's ridiculous, too. Right. But you want people that, and this is where Tennessee ultimately has issues, is that it's top to bottom, and it is their AD, because Philip Fulmer is Fulmer retiring. And this is something, by the way, is completely unrelated to Jeremy Pruitt getting fired, because when Philip Fulmer took over as the AD, he said, I don't want to do this for the long haul. Yeah. I'm doing this because I love the University of Tennessee.
Right.
And he only wanted to do it for a couple of years, and it's run its course. And now he's saying, all right, this has been in the works for a while. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason why these programs that are juggernauts, they have great administrations too. I mean, they really do. From Alabama, and they got Greg Byrne down there at Alabama. You got Ohio State with Gene Smith, who's a phenomenal athletic director, and they make the right hires, and they vet the right people, and they trust their gut and their instincts, as well as, you know, these search committees too.
I understand. I don't fault Tennessee for not wanting, because every college wants to go back to their heyday and feel what it's like. I go to college, everybody talks about what it's like back in, I know what that feels like. And Tennessee was in their heyday with Coach Fulmer. Mm-hmm. With Peyton Manning, they was like, back in the day. That's, I mean, 20 years from now, Oregon's going to go Chip Kelly in that run, and let's get back to when we were the greatest. We were the turf. We were fast. We were innovative. That's going to be your heyday. Now, how that changes moving forward, you never know. So I understand what they were trying to do with Philip Fulmer and trying to capture that nostalgia again. But sometimes you got to just go off script and get something and completely start over. But they tried that in other things. They're just grasping for straws. But this is right in line with trying to compete. This is with the Alabama effect. You try to get a Alabama coach. You try to compete with Alabama. You try to cheat to recruit with Alabama. You can't do it.
Well, I mean, Meat Market, the book by Bruce Feldman about Ole Miss and when Ed Orgeron was a coach there. Then you take The Bag Man, the article by Stephen Godfrey.
Got to do it. Got to do it to
these
compete.
These things were happening far before Alabama became the juggernaut that they are. And they'll happen far after. And that's why it's kind of ridiculous that, did you hear that? Here's the Tennessee Chancellor Plowman.
Yeah.
And how outraged she sounds.
This is not what any of us want for our football program or for our university. What is so disturbing, as demonstrated by the scope of these employment actions we are announcing today, is the number of violations and the number of people involved, and their efforts to conceal their activities from our compliance staff and from leadership within the athletic department. Most of all, we deeply regret the impact this may have on our many student athletes, particularly the vast majority of our football players who've had no involvement in this matter at all.
All right, let me do that. We don't want this from our program. Let me translate that really quick. She doesn't want the losing to happen. She's like, and the fact that the lengths that they went to cover it up, well, they got caught too. Yeah. Like those are the two big disappointments that she has, is that they did all this cheating and they didn't win.
But we didn't
and
get a championship.
And then they weren't even good enough not to get caught at it.
Do you think she was talked into Philip Fulmer and Jeremy Pruitt? Was she the chancellor at the time?
Mm-mm.
Well, she answers to the board of directors like every university that has that.
The boosters did.
The boosters did, because every athletic department is their own private entity. And these chancellors stand up there and act like they're, these guys are running their own place and doing their own thing. Nobody cares about upper campus or that campus when it comes to that kind of university. Others universities do, but those trying to win a national championship and beat Alabama are like, shocking. We're outraged. Well, of course you're outraged till you turn a blind eye. It was nice when the enrollment jumped up 20% when you're winning, but then it jumped down because you suck.
Mm-hmm. This past decade is going to be worth a decade of NCAA sanctions for Alabama, though. It'll be worth it.
College football is just such a gong show. It'll get there.
Hey, this scandal at Tennessee, if you want to call it that, it may affect, though, the Ducks. Search for a defensive coordinator. Big decision looms for Oregon. Which direction should they go? There's a ton of options right now. We'll talk about them next. Dusty and Cam on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.